The subject of time is a fascinating one. Albert Einstein, for example, concluded in his later years that the past, present, and future all exist simultaneously. In the ancient Indian text of the Mahabharata, dating back to around 800 BC, King Rivata is described as traveling to the heavens to meet with the creator, God Brahma, only to return to earth centuries in the future. The common Hindu interpretation is that time passes differently on different planes of existence. This idea is echoed in the Buddhist text Pali Canon, where it states that in the heaven of the 30 Devas, time passes to a different rhythm, where 100 years on earth equate there as a single day. One of the most well-known accounts of time travel was around World War II and known as the Philadelphia Experiment, where experiments conducted by the US military in 1943, the primary goal being to hide a Navy vessel, rendering it invisible to enemy radars. While this technological feat was said to have been achieved, a byproduct of the project was the phenomenon of time manipulation. So not only did the Navy ship tested disappear from radar, it was said to have vanished from present time. While Nikola Tesla was allegedly involved in the experiment, he died the same year, and his theories on the relationship between electromagnetic power and time were never published, seized instead by the FBI promptly following his alleged death and the first Philadelphia experiment. Time travel and complex machines that can help a person travel in time is a concept that's been a featured theme in science fiction literature and movies, especially since the end of World War II. For decades, there have been rumors of anti-gravitic craft developed by the Germans, from Foo Fighters to flying saucers, which were not only said to fly, but create their own gravitational field. In other words, the same technology that made the craft levitate was the same technology that bends space-time in such a way that time itself could theoretically be manipulated. In a 1963 film called The Yesterday Machine, we are introduced to a character that plays an old Nazi scientist who attempts to explain some of the advanced technology that the Germans were working on during the final years of the war.
What time is this? What century are we in?
Does it matter, my friend? There really is no such thing as time, except as a relative measuring device in your own mind.
Well, I know that you were a friend and sponsor of Adolf Hitler, that you helped elevate him to power in the 30s, and became the organizer and administrator of his Department of Scientific Warfare. That's another thing that puzzles me, Herr Doctor. Why a man of your brilliance should identify himself with a fanatical madman like Hitler?
How dare you refer to Adolf Hitler as a madman? He was a great genius, ahead of his time. It might interest you to know that during those last few months of the war, we had almost perfected weapons so far in advance of anything that had gone before them as to make modern warfare in all its forms completely obsolete. Oh, if we had only had time for further experiments.
I know of some of your experiments, like the ones carried out in a certain concentration camp.
Oh, then you know about the agent machine. Yeah, we had almost perfected that one when the war ended. Oh, but that machine was one of the more primitive devices, like the jets and the rockets that we used so briefly. We were in the final stages, Mr. Crandall, of perfecting weapons that were truly astounding and against which you would have had no defense. A cannon that killed with sound waves, yet was completely silent. A giant generator gun that could electrocute whole armies in the field. Oh, and more, many more. We'd have only had a few more months to perfect those weapons. We could have plucked victory from the jaws of defeat. The turret Reich would have endured, not for 1,000 years as the Führer dreamed, but forever.
But the fact is that you failed, Herr Doctor. Failed and lost.
But you are forgetting one thing, Mr. Xander. That was 20 years ago. Since then, I have perfected and even improved on my original weapons. And we have conquered time. Dr. Einstein's so-called fourth dimension. Hitler will return, Mr. Crandall, and soon. Your victory was but a temporary one. I have my own underground atomic power supply. Here are the master controls, and here are the selectors. With this dial, I can control the century I wish to deal with. These other dials, of course, are for the selection of the year, the month, the day, even the hours and minutes and even seconds. These are the acceleration switches with which I can control the velocity or speed of the passage of certain relative segments of time. Just as you would increase or decrease the speed of an automobile. Is that too difficult for you to grasp, Mr. Crandall?
Frankly, I'm beginning to doubt my sanity.
Well, you needn't. After all, there are very few people in the world who can understand even Dr. Einstein's theory of relativity. And my theories go far beyond his. But you are an intelligent man, Mr. Crandall. Perhaps I can explain it a bit more simply. Even let this line represent the world. Put a line here to represent the equator, and a mark here and a mark here for the north and south poles. If an aircraft starts here, this side of the equator, and starts going up and up and up, it is going north, toward the north pole. But the instant it passes over the pole, it is no longer going north. It is going south. And yet, it has not turned or changed its direction in any way. Now, that is the simplest way I know of to make you understand how my theory of superspectronic relativity was first developed. It has long been established that time and space do not exist except in relation to each other. Therefore, they are inseparable, indivisible, a space-time continuum. The faster we travel in space, the faster we travel in time. Now, let me use this short vertical line to represent an instant of time on this horizontal arrow to represent velocity. Or speed. Now then, scientists have long held that light is the top limiting velocity in the universe. In other words, there is nothing in the world faster than light. And yet it is known that beta particles ejected from the nuclei of radioactive substances can attain velocities up to 99% that of light. Now, I have always based my theories on the premise that there is no limit to space. The universe is limitless. Well, if there is no limit to space, then there is no limit to time, and no limit to velocity. Therefore, I thought there must be something in the universe that was faster than light. Oh, the years of frustration and failure before I finally had to submit to the one irrevocable fact, there is nothing in the universe faster than light. But I discovered a new ray in the spectrum, with a wavelength infinitely shorter even than that of the cosmic ray. This ray I called the minus ray.
I'm afraid you lost me, Doctor.
Well, in other words, while I discovered that the velocity of light is indeed the top velocity in the universe, that velocity need not remain constant. I discovered that through minus rays, velocity could actually be accelerated. Let me illustrate in this way. This line represents an instant in time. An instant, that is, in relation to our immediate vicinity in space. Now, if you enter a dark room or flip a switch, that room is instantly flooded with light. That is because that light, traveling at its great velocity, takes hardly any time at all to cover that small area of a room. It is immediate, instantaneous. Now, if that light had traveled any faster, it would have come on before you flipped the switch. Are you beginning to understand?
I think so.
Fine. Now then, just as I illustrated a moment ago with the airplane flying up over the world, heading north until it passed over the North Pole, then its direction became south, the same thing is true, in a sense, of time. If the velocity of ordinary light, represented by this arrow, should be accelerated, then it will pass beyond the instant represented by this vertical line and no longer be moving in the direction of the future, but it will be moving in the direction of the past. It will no longer be going forward in time, but backward. The greater the velocity, or I should say, the greater the acceleration, the further back in time it will travel.
In other words, if a guy left New York for Los Angeles and traveled fast enough, he'd get there before he started.
You joke, Mr. Crandall, but crudely expressed, that is exactly what would happen.
Why are you telling me all this?
To impress upon you the superior scientific knowledge that we possess, my friend, and to illustrate why we would have won the war. If we had only had a few more months, we were the slaves of time then. Time was our master. But I have changed all that. Now, we are the masters, and time is our servant. Ah, you Americans are an egotistical, arrogant lot. How proud and superior you felt as you strutted through the ruined streets of our cities. The proud conquerors claiming the spoils of war. But that is only temporary, my Yankee friend. Soon Hitler will return. We will rewrite history. And the Third Reich will endure. Not for 1,000 years or 100,000 years. But forever! Immortality. The age-old dream of man is ours. The rest of the world will fall at our feet, and we shall rule for all eternity!
While the movie is clearly science fiction, it does help to illustrate the idea that the Germans were working on some out-of-the-box technology during the first half of the 20th century. And while there are many science fiction movies about time and UFOs, there are also many who who have come forward now claiming that what we see in the films is art imitating reality. My name is Stoll, Axel Stoll. I'm a doctor of natural sciences. I'm familiar with all natural sciences and look at the problems in its entirety. Are you also Aryan? Yes, of course. I'm of Germanic heritage, that's all. My father was a military officer and volunteered to the SS during World War II. He was obligated to have an Aryan certificate. It's interesting, almost everyone was in the military, and your family had to have an Aryan certificate. Yes, my father, of course, all military personnel. And that's the reason why I'm quite knowledgeable in military technology. Here's the German flying saucers, developments as you can see. These are the early models, saucer models 1, 2, and 3. And these are the Honnebu flying saucers, different models. Honnebu, yes, the name Honnebu, Honnebu. It's of Germanic origin. There's a swastika painted on it, yes, on the initial ones. The moon is populated, Mars is populated by Nazis, and a few more planets. Probably also several other fixed star systems, but that's a guess. But that would mean that the moon and Mars is inhabited by Nazis? Yes, that's correct. The backside of the moon. Have you seen a UFO? Yes, several. Where? Here in the area of Berlin. Several. They perform vigorous aerial maneuvers. The movement, zack, zack, zack. And they're piloted by the Aryans? Yes, that's correct. So where did the Aryans come from? Presumably, but I can't prove it, from Aldebaran. From that star system. From the star system of the head of the Taurus, 68 light years away. With effects faster than light, it's only a short hop. So the Aryans basically weren't born on this planet? No, not born on this Earth. Well, there was also so-called Vril Society in the Third Reich, and they had telepathic contacts to Aldebaran with the Vril women, mediums. What about the wisdom of the Aryans? Are they more intelligent? How high is their IQ? High, very high. Were there also black people on Aldebaran? No. This planet is a prison planet. My name is Robert Sepper. Please look out for my books on Amazon.com. Thank you for subscribing and leaving a comment. I'm grateful to those who share these videos. Thank you very much, and I will see you soon.